All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Friday, obviously. Kevin's in the booth where he should be. Wendy's sitting there. I'm sitting here. And a welcome back to our friend Steve Bertrand, who was abroad for a week.
Yes, I was. And it felt good. I don't mind the clothes at all.
Easy transition?
Yeah, not at all. You know, I mean,
tell us stories of Ireland, Steve.
We just had another great time, a great group of WGN listeners, and, you know, came back telling stories and keeping some to ourselves.
Probably better that way.
Great hotels, great food, great, you know, you don't think of Ireland as having the great cuisine, but they really do now. They're working on it. And we had just had some fantastic meals and great weather. It was, it only rained for about 10 minutes for our whole trip.
Wow.
That's not bad.
In Ireland, that's pretty amazing in April.
Now, here's what everybody who I've ever talked to who has been to Ireland, they all say the same thing, that those would be the nicest people you'll ever encounter anywhere on the planet. Is that true?
Very welcoming people, yes. Yeah. They love to, they're very kind, and it's just a great place. I mean, I've led several trips there and can't wait for the next one.
What is wrong with me that I don't want to go anywhere?
I don't know. What is wrong with you?
I mean, I'm not even kidding.
You have an end at SteveBertrandTravel.com.
Right. I will set
you up.
My son Michael went with his school choir last year to Ireland on St. Patrick's Day. I could have been a chaperone. No desire to do it.
Really?
I'd like to go to Italy. Are you doing a...
I'll do Italy. You want to go to Italy?
Yeah, my grandpa was born in Venice.
Wendy, Italy or Italy?
I'd like to go to both. I can't do
Italy.
There.
Italy isn't far enough for me, but I can do Italy for you.
That's some place I would like to
see. You should definitely go.
But I'm not ready to for a couple years.
Why?
What's holding you back?
No one can stay with the kids.
You should lead a trip to Italy next summer, next fall.
That would be tremendous.
Next spring.
Go to the homeland and see where your
grandpa.
Just your grandfather is from.
He was born in Malvina, right near Venice.
Oh, that's funny. We stay in Malvina.
Honestly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's where he was born.
Is that not a female body part? Am I understanding that right?
That's
or wrong?
Why we linger.
Jeez, I'm going home early.
No, Malvina.
Oh, I'm sorry. You should definitely go.
Come on, Wendy. I've been trying to get you to lead a trip.
All the kids are going to Italy.
All right, we'll set it up. People send me an email.
All right.
Well, no, I got to
It's over. We're
ponder.
Done. You just committed.
But anytime you say, I got to do that in a couple of years, that means you're not going
to
do it.
No, that's one place. See, when I go on vacation, typically I like to go to a place where there's an ocean, although I don't really like going in the ocean that much. I just really need a pool in warm weather and drinks, cocktails poolside. That's
what
really
you need is, in Italy.
You need to be like just kidnapped and put on a plane and forced to go. You
would
love
surprises.
Think about that.
I will kick and scream.
It's more fun.
When my son Dylan was little, we were at a TJ Maxx, and he wanted some stupid toy that they had there. And I said, no, let's get going. And I grabbed him to say, come on, let's go. Yeah. And he's like, this is not my mother. Oh. Help me. I'm like,
Brilliant
this kid's going to go far.
That's a very smart move. Very smart. Steve, whenever people talk about Ireland, pub life comes to play. Is it really what everybody anticipates?
Is the pub life as big as we always stay in Killarney, right? A couple doors down from a great pub, Sheehan's, where you can listen to live music, authentic music all the time. Yeah, it sounds just like that.
That was a clip Steve brought.
I played. I brought my own harp.
Oh, beautiful.
No, it is. The pub
and that's
life
what
is...
you sounded like.
But guys just standing around telling stories and drinking Irish beer. What's wrong with that?
Nothing at all.
That's perfect.
Maybe sipping on a whiskey.
Yep.
Can I ask you a question? And this might be a stupid question.
Sure,
but
you
want to
go?
Never been there. Are there a lot of redheads in Ireland? Because I don't know that to be the case.
There are some. They are the descendants of the... I think it's the Vikings when they came over. And so that's where the red hair comes from.
Really?
From some of them, yeah. Not a lot.
Because you
don't
think...
see it like you... It's not a stereotypical thing.
Oh, interesting.
Why would you ask that? I'm curious.
Because Michael has red hair, and I just wondered...
But he was welcomed there.
Oh, definitely, but...
hold him at the border.
I forgot to ask him if he blended in or if he still kind of stood out being a redhead, because there aren't that many of them out there.
Hmm.
And Steve, I just wondered if they were all located in Ireland.
They are. Yeah, in the redhead district. They're all right there in the same place. It's easy to find them.
Well, we're glad you're back. We always question why you come back on a Friday.
It's always good to be back on a Friday. I love that Cure song. so I don't want to miss it the way the show opens.
You get yourself a nice short week if you come back on a Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a genius, isn't he?
Well, Wendy and I went out of our way to not do anything entertaining while you were gone.
I heard, actually.
Yeah.
But today is a different story.
Oh, today is a very different story. There's a lot on the show today, and one of the highlights, now, we always talk about how at noon you and I go to the stream. We're on the internet feed, the internet stream. Here's a little incentive for you. Antonia Bennett, who is the daughter of the great Tony Bennett, will be joining us. And this is exciting because both you and I are huge fans of Tony Bennett's. We don't know as much about his daughter Antonia, but we will find out about her. And that happens at 12 o'clock, but only on the stream.
Right, so Steve won't be able to partake in that.
Steve, we can fit you in.
I always listen to the podcast.
Oh, you do?
An hour after it's over.
Well, you'll get to hear it on there.
Look at you. Do we listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch?
I'm sure you do. You don't even have to say it.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, we do.
You saw my signal.
Yes, we do. We definitely do. All right. The Bears have another new quarterback. They just got a new quarterback a short time ago, and now they have another one. They drafted number two and picked up a new quarterback. But there's a side story to it that I think you'll enjoy.
All right, can we take a break and come back and talk about it?
Yeah, we'll take a little break.
Are you more excited about the Bears now? Yes!
I have to be honest with you. This could be a very positive thing for the Bears.
What have you done with Bill Lef?
I really think, I mean, it was a huge gamble because they gave up a lot of draft choices to get this guy, but this could be a very good step in the right direction. I'm optimistic about this.
Wow, you've changed.
I know, I have changed, but the side story I find more fascinating than the story itself. Actually, there's two, so we'll share those with you in just a little bit. Stay where you are. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. All right, so the NFL draft began last night, and the Bears originally had the number 3 pick, but they traded everything they owned. They said, whatever we have, we're going to trade because we want to move up one spot and get this quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. Now, Dave Ennett is standing by in the WGN sports department to help us out with this. Dave, was this a good move or not so good of a move?
Well, I think that any time you evaluate a draft, it's maybe years down the road before we know. But here's the caveat on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that this is the guy,
mm-hmm.
And what do most Bears fans, what's their biggest complaint aside from going
they lose a lot.
3-13?
Right.
Yes.
Too many losses.
We don't have a quarterback. You look around the NFL, all these teams have these great quarterbacks. We never seem to have one. And we thought they made the trade for Jay Cutler and thought he was going to be the guy. And you look at first round quarterbacks they've drafted since Jim McMahon. That's been Jim Harbaugh,
mm-hmm.
Who obviously had a very good NFL career, though most of his success came elsewhere.
Sure.
And Cade McNown and
Rex Grossman.
Who, so of those, I mean, take your pick, right?
Nope.
So here are the Bears deciding, okay, we have the number 3 pick in the draft after a 3-13 season. We've suffered enough. We're going to have a chance at a quarterback that we believe could be that guy. And so it's going to cost us, but maybe going into the draft, they didn't know they would make a trade. They would have a trade partner to move up one slot. Maybe they would have felt they would have gotten Trubisky at number 3, but they felt they had a chance and they were going to go for it. So they were aggressive. And they got the guy they think will be their quarterback of the future.
But, Dave, really quick, take a look at this. They moved up one slot. So was there a big fear that it would be San Francisco drafted in front of them, the 49ers
right.
Did they think that this guy Trubisky was definitely going to be the guy that would go to San Francisco?
I don't know that they thought San Francisco was going to take him.
But they didn't want to risk it.
I think Cleveland, they feared maybe. Another team was going to come in.
Oh.
Because the Browns, remember, this guy is from Ohio.
Yeah.
And there was some speculation that Cleveland would take him with that first pick.
Right.
But they went for Myles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M. So that left Trubisky still on the board.
Yeah.
San Francisco maybe wasn't going to take him, but would another team trade with San Francisco? 49ers would move down, which they did ultimately with the Bears, even though it's only one spot. And so they made a move to try to get to make sure that he didn't slip through their proverbial fingers.
What happens to Mike Glennon? Is that his name?
Mike Glennon, who is 5 years older than Trubisky, by the way, just for the record, will be the starting quarterback for the Bears, or so the Bears say right now. But at some point, you have to think that Trubisky.
Wait, Dave, two quarterbacks, that means quarterback controversy. Have the Bears ever had one of those? I don't remember them ever
having
one.
No, not generally.
No.
Not usually. No. And don't forget, there's also Mark Sanchez
right.
in the mix.
Right.
You know. The plan is not for Trubisky to play this year, but we know that things don't always go as planned. Last year, they didn't plan on Jay Cutler getting hurt.
Right.
They didn't plan on Brian Hoyer getting hurt. And so the Bears were struggling and ended up having a guy who came in and did a decent job for them towards the end of the year until the final game or two. But I think that they're going into this believing Glennon will be the number one quarterback. They will give Trubisky some time. He's only started 13 games in college. And I mentioned this earlier. Trevor Siemian, who played at Northwestern, started 14 games in college. And in his second year in the NFL, became the starting quarterback for the reigning Super Bowl champion Dallas Cowboys.
So it's possible.
Denver Broncos,
right.
Excuse me.
Put the Trubisky in the basket.
Well, his nickname is Mr. Biscuit.
Mr. Biscuit.
I love that. I did.
Yeah.
What about Moses Marino? What do we know about Moses Marino?
I don't think he's in the picture this year.
All right.
No.
Fair enough. I tell you, there was a lot of venom being spewed forth on Facebook last night when they gave up four picks to get Mitch Trubisky, Mr. Biscuit, if you will. And a lot of people are hating, but how does the general public even know? I mean, it seems weird, but... Mm-hmm.
That's what just amazes me about this whole draft show. You know,
all speculation.
Well, I've never seen an event that is you don't know for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And even then, I don't understand the appeal of the big draft show.
Dave, what's the appeal? It's hope. It's built on hope,
isn't
it? It's
built on hope. And look, everybody in the world thought when the word got out that the Bears had made a trade with San Francisco that they were going to take Solomon Thomas.
Yeah.
I mean, listen to John Gruden. Oh, this is a great pick for the Bears. This is going to be, he's going to fit in really nicely there in Vic Fangio's defense.
Yeah.
And so everybody thinks, okay, done deal. So even the experts fully expected the Bears to take Solomon Thomas. And everybody, that to me was the most fun part of the whole evening is watching everybody, including myself, get totally surprised by this move.
Well, the word experts doesn't mean what I think it means because, you know, look at the presidential election and all the experts saying, well, this is the way it's going to be, so get used to this, and then it wasn't. But that happens in everything. Anytime you have experts prognosticating on what's about to happen, it always happens differently.
The exit polls yesterday all had the Bears taking Solomon Thomas if they moved up in the draft, and maybe even if they didn't move up in the draft.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I said, Dave, that there are two side stories to this, and I just want to get to the first one with you, and if we have time, we'll do it after the second one after the news. The first interesting side story to me is this, and he's getting criticized for this a lot, but I don't think he should be. Mitch Trubisky said afterwards, they asked him who his favorite football player was, and he said that his favorite football player of all time would be Walter Payton, and people started ripping on him because Walter Payton's last football game was in 1987, and Mitch Trubisky wasn't born for another 6 or 7 years.
Correct.
So what?
My point exactly. You could easily still... Your favorite movie could be a movie from before you were born. Your favorite performance artist, you know, your favorite band could have been a band that happened beforehand. Your book could have been written in the 1940s.
Exactly.
Why all the criticism about Walter Payton being his favorite football player?
Yeah, I never saw Red Grange play, but he was my favorite growing up.
How about that?
He actually said, I believe his quote was that he got a copy of
a book,
either Walter's book or a book written about him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how he became, and maybe he saw highlights of him.
Right.
I mean,
the other thing that happened last night was the tweet that surfaced.
What was the tweet?
That was go Packers. It was hell yeah, go Pack or something. And it was something tweeted by Mitch Trubisky, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And he was asked about that last night when he was meeting with him. In fact, here, if you want to hear this.
Sure.
This was from his teleconference with reporters up in Lake Forest. And here, let's see, where is this?
Do we know why he'd have an allegiance to the Green Bay Packers at any point in his life? Is there a reason?
Here was the quote.
All
no, right. He grew up in Ohio.
Yeah.
in Mentor, Ohio.
Which is why all the speculation that the Browns would be even more interested
right.
in him.
All right. Here's what he said when he was asked about that tweet.
No, I was never a Packers fan. I don't know what that tweet's from. It's probably just one specific game. But no, I'm a Chicago Bear now, so none of that matters.
And, you know, maybe he is watching a game and he's rooting for the Packers.
Right. I'll leave the guy alone. You know? Leave Mr. Biscuit alone.
Yeah.
How many Bears have gone on to play for the Packers?
Love this joke.
Many.
So, freshman year of college, one of my coaches, they were out with family friends or whatever, and somebody said my name and kind of stuttered it or mumbled it, and he's like, "What'd you say, Mr. Biscuit?" Instead of Mitchell Trubisky. So, it kind of stuck that week at practice, and then that's what all the boys started to call me.
Mr. Biscuit.
Mr. Biscuit. Yeah, that's, well, he could be, don't go well for him. Yeah, you know, that could be rough.
He could be like a guy, you know how at Popeyes they'll have like a guy dressed up like a giant chicken wing or something? He could be one of those guys.
Could be. Could
All
be.
Right.
Get Mr. Biscuit and the bread man together.
Right.
They can hang out.
That's
high carb diet.
Like that.
Beautiful. All right, Dave, thanks very much for hanging out with us.
Go Bears.
Go Bears, not Packers. What are you talking about? We have Mr. Biscuit now. Everything's all right. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill F., and it's Wendy Snyder, and you can call us or text us at any point during the show, maybe with a question, maybe with a comment, whatever you like. We're at 312-981-7200.
You were going to talk about draft things.
Yeah.
Did you listen or pay attention to it? I know Adam Hoge was on with Justin Kaufman last night, but isn't it just reading a bunch of names every few minutes, kind of like going to a kid's graduation?
Yeah. It's a slower version of a kid's graduation.
One slower than that?
It's not even your own child's graduation. It's like going to somebody else's kid's graduation.
You want to come with me to Michael's graduation or Dylan's graduation year?
Oh, would that be fun?
And you don't know if they get the diploma for 3 years.
Right. That's crazy.
Right. But if I may, this is the absolute highlight, and we will play a clip for you so you don't think I'm making this up. What happens now, this has become routine with this NFL draft, is they bring out the commissioner of football, and his name is Roger Goodell. And Mr. Goodell is not extremely well-liked.
Right.
He is not well-liked. So he knows when he takes the stage, he's going to meet with some adversity. He doesn't know how much and for how long, but there's going to be some resistance to the fact that Roger Goodell is up there speaking. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
As a child. Is that where the Liberty Bell is?
Liberty Bell is there.
Yes. I think I looked at it when I was like four.
So you have been overseas.
Over rivers.
Right. All right. So Roger Goodell knows he's coming out, and he knows it's Philadelphia, where they don't mess around. If they don't like something in Philadelphia, they don't play games. You know,
really? They're very forward?
There's some cities. If you go to Minnesota and the people in Minnesota don't like something, they won't tell you they don't like it. They will say that it's different. Oh, that's different. That's just what goes on in Minnesota. In Philadelphia, if they don't like something, they'll take out some sort of a weapon and they'll point it at you.
Ah.
They're very, very angry people in Philadelphia. So let's listen to the first moment as Roger Goodell comes out to let the fans know that the draft time is here and it's going to be fun and it's going to be great. So let's listen to how that first minute went. They just announced his name, and the crowd is booing like crazy.
Good evening, and welcome to the NFL Draft. Come on, Philly, come on. There you go.
Now, Kev, can you stop it for a second? What you can't see there is he goes, "Come on, Philly, come on," and he raises his hands and, you know, moves him towards himself. Is like,
give me some more.
Yeah, is this all you got?
Bring it to me.
Right. I'm disappointed. If this is the most booing you can do, then you're letting me down. Come on, Philly, give me what you got. And they do.
That's pretty great.
Booing him. All right, Kev, continue.
To be back here in Philadelphia, where the first draft was held nearly 80 years ago. So tonight, we celebrate the great game that we all love. And we celebrate as NFL dreams come true. So it sounds like you're ready. Are you ready? The NFL draft for 2017 is officially open. The Cleveland Browns are on the clock.
All right, so they booed him being there. They booed that the first NFL draft was in Philadelphia. They booed everything he mentioned. It was a one-minute barrage of them just booing.
How could you stay on the stage? I got to give him a lot of credit.
I know. I said to Kevin, do you imagine when he goes backstage, because he goes up to the podium and then he goes backstage, do you imagine whoever's there, he just looks at him and goes, well, that went all right, right? I did okay out there, didn't I? I couldn't tell.
He taunted them, though.
I'm trying to figure out, it was sort of a taunt, but you have to do something. You can't just pretend, like politicians are trained when they show up somewhere and they get booed, they're trained to act as if they're not being booed.
I couldn't do that.
Right,
I could not just pretend it's not happening, especially with that volume.
Thousands of people booing every, like no matter what he would have said, hey, I brought you guys cake, boo, an ice cream too, boo. Like whatever he would have said, they would have booed it.
It is not always sunny in Philadelphia, is it?
I never thought I'd feel bad for him, but honestly, 30 seconds in, I'm like, Roger, they're not going to stop booing. Say whatever you need to say and say it quickly, because these people will boo. If you're up there for 90 minutes, they're going to boo you for 90 minutes. They won't stop.
But it seems like he played with that, you know?
A little bit.
I don't think he was bothered. I didn't see his face, so I don't know if he looked nervous or anything, but...
He didn't look... It was almost as though he knew it was coming because, you know, last year's draft was here in Chicago, mm-hmm. and he got booed a little bit, not like last night, not like Philadelphia. Those guys lead the league in booing. They're the best booers in the country. They boo with the best of them, Hall of Fame quality booers. Like, he got a little bit of it here in Chicago,
but it
quickly tapered off. It's like, all right, we don't like you.
But when he said, "Give it, come on, that's all you have," he was taunting them.
Right.
I feel he was like, he expected it. Let's make it a spectacle.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't feel sorry for him.
Wouldn't you spend like the days that preceded the draft trying to find somebody to fill in for you? Going, I don't want to go out there. I got to get somebody. Who's the most well-liked person on the planet? I got to get them to come out and open up the draft.
Or the guys go home after the draft. How was it, honey? Oh, it was awesome. I booed for 2 hours.
Right.
All the good stuff. I booed it.
Right.
You would have loved it.
Everything they mentioned, whether I liked it or I hated it, I stood up and I booed. It was great. What a night.
Well, we got Mr.
Biscuit. And I brought my son.
Right. To teach him, to pass the booing torch on to him.
I have friends who went to the NFL draft when it was downtown,
yeah.
and it was crowded.
Oh, it was jam-packed.
I just don't understand who would go to that.
There, if you had seen the faces, because sometimes they'll show a close-up, like they'll announce a name, and then they'll find people in the crowd that are fans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the Panthers or the you know whatever team has just made their pick. And their faces tell the story because they're like, this is the one guy we needed to make everything right. Or other people are like, are you serious? I've been looking forward to this for so long, and you picked that guy? They're like, nobody's holding back on this. It's as emotional as you could possibly imagine.
When I went to Philadelphia on a family vacation, I didn't realize people were so outspoken there. But, Craig, you know about Philadelphians?
I don't know about them, but I've heard of two different stories where they've thrown snowballs at Santa at a mall or an outside mall and a football game. They threw snowballs at a Santa.
At Santa Claus.
I think they hate people in there in Philadelphia for some reason.
That's cold.
Yeah, snowballs are cold.
But it's called, ironically enough, the City of Brotherly Love.
That's a bad name for that town. City.
They should call it Boozville.
Bootown.
Boozville or Hateville or something.
Thank you, Craig. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Isn't that great?
And I was wondering who would go. Cheryl, you did an NFL draft?
Well, Wendy, I'm wondering who wouldn't want to go. It was the first year it was here, it was like the perfect day. You're on the lake, you're downtown. I got to meet Melissa Stark. I got to meet Pat Fitzgerald. I got an autograph from Dan Hampton. Like, it was one of the best days I've ever spent in the city. It was so much fun.
Now, are you a big Bears fan, Cheryl?
I've been a Bears fan since I was a little girl, and I do have a quick story to tell you, so you'll know the level of my obsession. Do you remember Noah Jackson? He was a lineman back in the day.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just loved him. And I wrote him a fan letter on my Raggedy Ann stationery when I was like 5 years old. But you know what? The saddest thing, he never answered me back.
Aww.
That was the saddest thing. But I've been a Bear fan ever since. So I'm kind of a crazy fan. I call the sports guys. Glenn Kozlowski actually loves when I call because I often talk about ice skating in addition to football.
Oh, nice.
He hates ice skating.
Very nice.
So, anyway. But, yeah, the draft was a blast, and I'm really sad that it's not back in the city this year. So
it's really strange. They did it twice here in a row and got incredibly high marks from everybody. But, you know, I guess they have to mix it up a little bit. So,
Wendy, you missed your opportunity. I mean, it was great.
That's all right. Are you excited about Mr. Biscuit coming to the Bears?
Who?
Exactly.
I mean, when I think of football, college football powerhouse, North Carolina is not first on my list. So I'm kind of skeptical, and I don't think that was, like, their biggest need. An offensive lineman might have been nice. A safety might have been nice. And now that they gave away all the rest of their picks, I don't know what they're going to do.
So Cheryl knows her stuff, doesn't she,
boy,
Bill?
Absolutely.
Bill's nodding at everything you say.
That's excellent.
Well, I often say, my husband always tells me I missed my calling, that I should have gone into and actually, you know, maybe my next career, I'll take a job at WGN.
All right.
Well, go Bears, Cheryl, and have a great weekend.
Bears.
Thanks so much, Cheryl. Take care.
Okay, bye.
All right, a little bit of a break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Congratulations, Coach Pat Fitzgerald.
Our university, our programs are committed to championships, and we're going to do it the right way. We're going to do it the Northwestern way.
Congratulations, Coach Chris Collins.
This is where I'm going to be, and I couldn't be more excited about that.
Leading the Northwestern Wildcats now and into the future.
Pat, Chris, congratulations. The future of our football and men's basketball programs is in excellent hands.
From all of us at the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
Starting Friday through Saturday at the Meijer two-day sale, find extra hot prices for apparel, accessories, garden items, and more. Sunglasses are buy one, get one for a dollar. And men's and women's swimwear is 40% off. Plus, get ready for spring planting. Select Bonnie herb or vegetable plants are 4 for $12. And bags of Scott's Triple Shred mulch are 3 for $10. Exclusions apply. See all the deals and our full ad at Meijer.com. You get more at Meijer.
People ask a lot of questions about Ivy Tech Community College. Like, can an Ivy Tech degree get me a good career? Well, some say good, and some say great. Graduates with associate degrees can make median annual earnings of $41,496. In 2 years or less, you could be qualified for some of Indiana's fastest growing career fields. Find your answers at ivytech.edu/FAQ. Then apply for free at ivytech.edu.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-401-3224 now. That's 800-401-3224 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-401-3224 to learn more. 800-401-3224. That's 800-401-3224. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
All right, I have been working on remodeling my kitchen. I haven't started yet because I have other things going on and I have a party coming up and it's just bad timing. But I've been hanging with Tom Jenke at the Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom in Builder Supply Outlet. Jealous much?
I would need to see a picture of this to just to prove that it's true.
You know,
take one picture.
The first time I went into Builder Supply Outlet, I was amazed by all the prices, and they have such a huge selection on things. And now they get new items, so I keep going in more often. At first, Jimmy Mack did not want to come with me. Like, oh, I don't want to go. And after going there a few times, he's the one who says to me, hey, let's go to Builder Supply Outlet. Let's see what's new. Well, right now they have a huge truckload of lighting fixtures from a major manufacturer. There are some really beautiful ones that will go perfectly in our house. They have beautiful brushed nickel and chrome chandeliers, wall sconces, lighting pendants for indoors or out, ceiling mount fixtures, and even ceiling fans. And they're all priced at 50% less than the same exact thing that we saw online. 50% less. You change a lighting fixture in a room, it changes the whole look of that room at a very affordable price. Builder Supply Outlet truly has outlet prices every day on every item, and they really do treat you like family. So go check them out. Builder Supply Outlet is just 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Mall. It's on Cermak Road at 25th Ave in Broadview. And be sure to tell Tom Jahnke that I said hi. Say, Wendy sent me.
I've been hanging out with the lady who sings the Cars for Kids song. And
how's that going?
It's going
Tell
good.
Her she's doing great
she's,
work.
Yeah, she's a very good singer-songwriter.
Isn't it a kid who sings it, though?
No, it's a lady.
I don't think so.
Mm. The lady told me she sang it.
You're getting a bootleg version of the song.
I believed it was her. Maybe. Whatever. What are your thoughts on this, Wendy? There's a mother in Canada whose daughter, a grade school student, age 10, says that homework is causing her stress. You know, she gets homework every night and she comes home and she's stressed because she has a lot of homework. So her mother has informed the school that due to the stress that her daughter is incurring because of all this homework, her daughter will no longer be doing homework.
I applaud that, Mom.
I do.
Bill, you've yeah. seen it. When we had homework in high school,
right.
it was a quarter of what our kids have in high school. And elementary school and junior high,
yeah.
it's way too much.
Yeah.
It's overkill.
It has definitely increased. I think I averaged when I was a kid. I think they gave us roughly an hour of homework a night, all told. I didn't always do an hour of homework a night.
Right, and a lot of times you'd finish it before an hour was up.
Most of my homework was done in the class before that homework was due. Like if I had science homework, I did it in math class. If I had math homework, I did it in geography class. Whatever it was due, class before.
Procrastination.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But yeah, there have been nights that my daughters, all the way back into grade school, they're both in college now, but where they would have 3 hours of homework.
That is a lot of homework. Kids are not able to be kids anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Bah.
I'm serious.
Come on.
It's tripled.
What else
it's
do they have to do?
Oh
all
my
we talk
God.
About, all we talk about is how far behind we are in our education system. What, are we taking away from Pokemon Go?
Well, if your child is also involved in a
any
sport or
other
a play or anything, yeah, anything else the school has to offer, it makes for an incredibly long day. It
and
really
then,
does.
You know, and I totally agree. I, along with this mother, says no more homework and school should start later.
Like what time would you start the school day?
I've gone over this. We've talked about this. It should start like at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I know then they say, well, then the after-school activities will go too late in the night.
Sure.
Loosen up on the homework. Start the day later. It's impossible to get teenagers up.
Steve, with an opposing viewpoint?
No, I don't mind starting it later, but I don't agree with lessening homework just because it takes up too much of their time.
But a lot of them listen, I don't have athletes. I have musicians and a video game player, and they still can't keep up. I can't imagine kids who are in sports and choir and all this stuff. There's homework there's no time for it.
It does make for a long, tough schedule. One brave mother stepped up to the parenting plate for her child, sharing an email that she sent to her daughter's school explaining that her 10-year-old is, quote-unquote, done with homework because of the undue stress that it causes. This is a strange name. I'm going to do my best to say it properly. Bunmi Lataton, a mom blocker in
Of course
Quebec,
I will.
explained on Facebook that she told her daughter's school that her child would be drastically reducing the amount of homework that she'd be completing, but she was trying to be polite because her daughter is finished. I don't know what that means. I just sent an email to her school letting her know that she is all done. Oh, that's what it means.
She's finished
doing homework. Over the past 4 years, I've noticed her getting more and more stressed when it comes to school, the mother wrote. And by stressed, I mean she would get chest pains. She was waking up early and
anxiety.
She was dreading school in general.
That's more kids are reporting anxiety and depression.
But don't see, I'm somewhere in the middle on this because what'll happen is her kid is 10 years old now. So that probably means like fourth grade, give or take. All right. So in high school, it's going to magnify, and in college, probably even more. And then real life happens. And a lot of times, depending on what you do for a living, you have to take your work home with you and get it done at some point.
She should be focusing on helping her child deal with the stress of the homework.
And maybe she is. We don't know that. Maybe she's already seeing a therapist. I will say one thing.
Yeah.
I don't agree with the no homework, although there have been times I've emailed teachers saying, you know, my
this is
kid,
a lot of homework.
It's a lot of homework, like for math, doing 30 problems.
Yeah.
I would email and say they've done 5 problems and show me they understand it. That's what they're doing tonight.
Right.
I don't know about no homework.
Here's what I hope everybody will remember this. I remember this vividly from my scholastic career, is that every teacher, it's not like the teachers huddled together and go, which night are you going to give homework and which night are you going to give homework and which night? And every teacher kind of feels like, and maybe rightfully so, that their class is the most important one for the child. So they're going to give, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour. Another teacher's going to do the same. Another teacher's going to do the same. And there's no way you can balance it out.
I
mean, if you have one of those classes where homework is fast and furious, I don't know how you ever catch up. So what's the answer to this? I don't know if there is one. Ladadin explained that her daughter often does homework until 6:30 p.m. with little or no time to relax after dinner. Is family time not important, she wrote? Is time spent being a child relaxing at home not important? Or should she become some kind of a junior workaholic at the age of 10? Children need downtime after school the same way adults need downtime after work. They need to play with their siblings, she continued. All true, but I think to Steve's point is at some point you got to try and figure out some sort of a balance, you know?
I don't agree with the no homework, but I do think that they are overscheduled with homework. Don't you remember coming home from school and you could go out and play until dinner time?
I could, but I had a couple of friends and their family's rule was you don't go anywhere until your homework is done. One of my best friends, you know, we'd all after school when the weather got nice, we'd all be playing baseball and he couldn't because his parents were like, no, when your homework's done, then you go out and play baseball.
That's
and today
good.
He's a very successful lawyer. He's doing really, really
that's
well.
Good.
In fact, he's going to file suit on behalf of this mom.
I do agree in a weird way. It's like if I have work to do, I like to get it out of the way so then I can relax.
Sure.
But there's something to be said for a young kid, especially 10 years old, sitting in a school room for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And you got to blow off some steam when you get home. You got to. You have to have a snack.
Yeah.
Maybe some Kraft singles.
Watch Deputy Dog.
And then.
That's good. Give them some processed cheese food. That'll help them.
Right. I know, but think about that. We ate that. We had those a lot. I mean, they're.
I love the Swiss.
Yep.
Oh, they make a Swiss
they did
cellophane wrapped
yeah.
one?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Nice cheese product.
No
cheese
holes,
food.
So you got more for your money.
You were very thrifty. You know that?
All right, we must take a break, and then there will be some news, and then there will be more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F., and it's Wendy Snyder, and Kurt Wagner is here, our friend from TVShowPatrol.com, to talk a little television. If you have any questions or comments, like when will your favorite show be back on, or how come this is still on? We're at 312-981-7200. Hi, Kurt.
Hello.
How are you?
All right.
We saw you last week just before the C2E2 convention. This is a lot of pop culture and a lot of superheroes and a lot of Star Wars and things like that. What were your impressions? Were you happy with what you saw?
Yeah, we didn't spend a lot of time on the floor. It was jam-packed on Saturday when we went. But we did some interviews and went to the Blacklist
the panel,
which was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's always cool. It's fun to see the costumes.
Did you dress funny?
No.
A lot of people dress
well,
up
somebody
like...
might have thought I dressed funny.
But you weren't doing cosplay?
But I wasn't cosplaying, no.
No,
I had a bowling shirt on.
Oh, well,
with my name on the front.
Oh, well, that's something.
But it wasn't my bowling shirt.
Oh, you're
second
very
hand.
Tricky. You're very, very tricky. We've talked about this with you in the past, but now it seems like almost a done deal. There's a writer's strike scheduled for the 1st of May, right?
Yes, it's looming.
Yeah.
Depending on who you talk to, the one thing I read, some pundits said it's that he feels there's only a 75 there's a 75% chance it won't happen, and a 25%
what
it
is
will.
What are they basing that on? Because as of a day or two ago, it seemed all but certain that there was going to be a strike.
Yes, I know. Apparently, there's been some movement, but I guess, like I said, it depends on who you talk to. But if it does happen,
yeah.
Late night talk shows will be the first to go.
Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, every one of your favorite talk shows, they all employ a bunch of writers.
Right.
And that's the problem. You can't do the show without the writers. Although in the past, they have tried doing it.
And do you think they'll try this time? Because I bet they'll try.
I don't know. You know, like, Colbert's knocking it out of the park right now, but I know he's not writing everything.
No, of course.
And also, I would think the hosts would support their writers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
because
true. Because they're
writers themselves and former writers.
Wasn't Letterman, back in the last writer's strike, wasn't he giving all the writers a bunch of money during the strike just
Could
to
be.
Keep them afloat?
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And a couple of the guys have, like, they would take away the monologue from the show. So all they had to do was come out, and then they start bringing guests out. Because you kind of need a writer to set up the questions, kind of, but you can almost get through it without writers to do that.
I mean, that's about the only thing, because even Fallon does all the skits and everything.
Right.
Or the skits and the games and stuff. And you know, some of that's off the cuff, but you know, a lot of it's sort of scripted or written anyway.
I like that goofy Jimmy Fallon, and I know people who are fond of late-night talk shows aren't really that big of a fan, because he really doesn't do top-notch interviews. It's like goofy stuff, but it's kind of like the variety show. I kind of like that.
It is more of a variety show. You're right. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. But then I also read that if it happens and it'll affect summer shows, that you might see more game shows.
Oh, sure. Although you still need writers for game shows.
Maybe they think, maybe that's a different
That stuff
thing.
Just
but
doesn't
I did
happen
read that
organically.
I read somewhere that the story ended, just get ready for more match game. I mean, but yeah, who writes the questions if it's not a writer?
All right. During the first of the big writer strikes a decade or so ago, this was kind of the birth of reality television, because there weren't writers writing the regular shows, and reality television became a much bigger deal. But if you look at the end of most reality shows in the credits, there's still people writing those shows, which seems counterproductive to what the title is. But it's not, because somebody's setting those events up.
Right. Well, I think that most reality shows that are sort of docu-reality, docu-series, I feel they're not very real. I mean, I feel they're pretty scripted.
Absolutely.
And if they do something and they don't get it on camera, they ask them to do it again, mm-hmm. but maybe say this instead or whatever. I think maybe some of the competition shows, but not even like Amazing Race and those, are still sort of written. Some parts are still written.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can think of would be The Voice, maybe.
Yeah.
But even they wouldn't have the little sidebars where they talk about the person singing, you know, like their background or anything. They'd probably not be able to have all that. Although I think most of The Voice is... No, they're on live shows right now, so they would just have to not have those background pieces.
Oh.
Unless they've already been done.
All right.
Somebody just texted, is American Idol coming back? Any news on
There's talk of it, yeah. They're working to see what they could do, how they could do it.
You knew at some point, because it was just too successful for too long, although I didn't think it would be back this fast. It's
only
been out for a year.
They might even be working or trying for another network or something.
Kurt, in the past they have done this with a couple of shows. They did it with Dick Van Dyke, they've done it with I Love Lucy. They take old black and white episodes and they spruce them up, they colorize them, and they throw them on network TV, even though it's been, you know, 60 years later, 50 mm-hmm. or 60 years later with Lucy anyway. They're doing it again, right?
Yeah.
There's no need to colorize it, come on.
I don't think so.
I don't either, but they do. They want to see her red hair, I guess.
Well, you know what it is? Is that kids who grew up where everything was in color on TV and in movies, it scares them.
They think the world was in black and white back then.
Right. 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 But these special shows, they do well in the ratings. People like to see the old episodes colorized.
And the technology is much better now, too. So when they were first colorizing things, the color sort of... You could see it as they moved. Sometimes you know, it's smeared almost. It looked like it's smeared or whatever, but it's much better now. But
you think back to the old, like, Twilight Zone episodes, which mm-hmm. I love watching with my boys, and they're mm-hmm. black and white. That would be stupid if all of a sudden those came
I
back
agree.
In color.
Yeah.
It's just, it lends itself.
I think that that particular show should not ever be colorized.
I don't think any of them
should. It seems more dreamlike or nightmarish for some reason the black and white does.
Yeah.
Because it's a skewed reality. I like it so much better in black and white.
Right. I don't mind the I Love Lucy's in color, but, you know, I don't know if part of I Love Lucy was in color eventually later in the
The Lucille Ball show.
Yeah, her other Lucy show.
Yeah,
the Lucy
yeah.
show.
Where she's
and
Lucy
the,
Carmichael.
Lucy, yeah, and
that was in black and white.
Chief? Wasn't that one?
No. That's Miss Jane Hathaway from Beverly Hills.
Oh, I get them mixed up. Somebody
yeah, she
said
had
that
her
it was called
Mr. Mooney.
Oh, that's right.
And he was in black and white in real life.
He
was never.
He should have been.
It
was Conan O'Brien who paid his writers.
It was Conan O'Brien.
Somebody has texted us, so that rang a bell. So
that's
yes,
right.
not
that's
David Letterman.
Right.
All right.
In this new I Love Lucy, their superstar special, you got back-to-back episodes, and the guest stars are who? Do you know?
Van Johnson and Harpo Marx.
People love Van Johnson.
And I remember the Harpo Marx. Well, I don't remember it from
the
original. They
did the mirror dance.
Watching it. Yeah, they do the mirror
dance.
Oh,
I remember that. She wore the wig.
Yeah.
A ton of times, yeah.
Wow.
And there's not, yeah. And
it's really great.
There, yeah. And then the Van Johnson one, the dancing star, I don't remember
that's
that
to get kids to watch because kids love Van Johnson.
Big fans.
And doesn't he have red hair, too?
Yes, he does.
So
that's the fun of that episode. It's like, I can't tell if it's Van Johnson or Lucille Ball.
Right,
they look the same to me.
Dueling redheads.
And dueling Harpos. There's a theme going here.
It is a theme. What do we know when? What's the date on this?
May 19th, Friday.
Friday night?
Yeah. May 19th. So they'll put them together, and it's an hour long.
All right. That'll be fun to watch.
Have you watched This Is Us yet?
No.
I'm going to kick you in
not
the chin.
Not yet. I'm going to see it soon. I'm waiting. I'm building.
This summer, though, for sure?
Yeah, for sure this summer. Absolutely.
When's that coming back? And two full seasons have been ordered for that.
Yes.
I'm
excited. It'll come back in the fall if there's not a writer's strike.
Right.
Oh, no.
If there is, you're going to have to write new episodes.
Strike, well,
I could do it.
Mess a lot of things up. If it happens.
Yep.
Depending on how long it is, of course.
The end of the world as we know it.
End of the entertainment
world. The thing is, nobody wants it to happen because
everyone loses.
They're pumping out TV shows
right
and left. And,
more than ever.
I can't imagine the producers or networks or production companies or anybody saying, too bad. We just won't have shows.
Is one network or television property going to give in first and say, come on, we got to do this?
Well, that's how it works. Yeah. I mean, somebody will, but I just... Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel for the writers.
Mm-hmm.
Being a writer, not of those kind of things, but being a writer who doesn't get paid as much as he would like to get paid.
I have two writer girlfriends that I hope can keep their jobs.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We'll discuss this and many more things. If you want to jump in, you know how. 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. It's Bill and Wendy and with Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com on WGN. It's Bill Laffin. It's Wendy Snyder along with Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com. Oh, sometime in the next 41 minutes, we'll be giving away a trip for you to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin. It's fantastic. When you hear Wendy make the dolphin noise, be caller number 9. As soon as Wendy makes the dolphin noise, be caller number 9, and you're going to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort.
Do we have a recording of that? Because I can't do it on command.
You can't? Anytime it's ever come up on the show, you're always able to do it very easily. Do you want to do a practice one?
No, because if I do it, then it counts.
Not if we announce that it's a practice dolphin.
I usually only have one in me, so maybe we should just wait.
All right.
I'm getting older, you know.
Sure, I get it. All right, so yeah, between now and let's say noon exactly, you'll hear a dolphin noise or an attempt at a dolphin noise, and then be caller 9 at 312-981-7200, and you and a loved one will go to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in beautiful Door County.
Point to me when you want me to do it, okay?
All right. Kurt, this Sunday is the anniversary of a television milestone, and I think by today's standards, it's kind of no big deal, but 20 years ago, it was a huge deal. What happened 20 years ago?
It was a huge deal. Ellen DeGeneres came out on television on her show, Ellen.
Right.
It was a sitcom. It was not her talk show, which she does now. And it was two episodes. It was a two-parter, the puppy episodes, parts 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the character came out.
Remind me, because in my head, this is what happened chronologically, but I'm not sure, but I think this is what happened. She herself, Ellen DeGeneres, came out a couple of weeks prior, and then her character on the show, on her sitcom, came out just a short time after, right? Is that what happened?
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't quite
remember. I think that's what happened.
It was
But yeah, people were very shaken together. Up by this because on the show especially, much of the premise of her show was dating the wrong guys. She kept dating guys.
And her mom would always try to fix her up with somebody and everything. Yeah, and then she finally, like the way they set it up was she met someone.
Laura Dern.
Laura Dern, and it just clicked. Yeah. They just clicked.
That's a pretty awesome way to do it.
Well, and it had such a huge guest star list in those two episodes. Oprah was on there, Oprah Winfrey, Laura Dern, Demi Moore, Melissa Etheridge, Billy Bob Thornton, Dwight Yoakam, and Katie Lang.
Wow.
So a lot of gay luminaries were on there. But at that time, it was pretty amazing.
What was the reaction from most people to this?
I think it was mixed.
Yeah.
It was very mixed at the time.
But it sure hasn't made a difference now. She is beloved.
Yeah, she is.
Good for her.
She is. And that, I think it seemed like she was more open and honest after that. I mean, I don't know that she could do her talk show the way she does it now without having had that happen.
Right. Without a doubt. Now, her character that she played on her sitcom wasn't by far the first gay character on television. There were other gay characters on television, but it was the first time that I remember anyway that a character came out as part of the...
Well, and that I think an actor came out in such a big way, too.
Yeah,
you know, without being forced out or... Yeah.
Billy Crystal played a character on Soap, Jody Dallas, and I remember it was so controversial that there was an openly gay character.
That whole show was controversial.
Yeah. Oh, that was out. Was that 70s? The late 70s or early 80s?
Yeah, 70s.
Yeah.
So there were some affiliates that weren't comfortable carrying Soap because there was a gay character on Soap. They thought, all hell is going to break loose if we run this.
Right. I mean, that's
how it was.
Yeah.
So look, we have gotten better. Yeah. We're not going backwards like some people think.
Right. Now, would you agree with this? I always think that because of the shows that are on, Modern Family does a good time with has a good amount of time with a gay couple on the show. There's so many names of shows. Grey's Anatomy has gay characters.
I think, there's a ton of them.
So don't you think Will and Grace was built on gay characters? So don't you think that for the general public, a lot of times seeing those characters on television helps with acceptance overall?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see these characters and see that they're no different really than anyone else.
Nope.
I mean, it's the whole like message of that show Sense8 that's on Netflix, which is coming back May 5th, is that, you know, if we all just work together and get along and understand that we're different and that's okay, then
sure.
Then everything, you know, you don't need to demonize or villainize.
Right. Yep.
Which I want to bring up this goofy Heineken commercial just very briefly because it ties into that. I don't know if you've seen it. Look for the Heineken commercial. I'll admit it's a little long, but they have people that are put together in a room to complete a project, and they are interviewed and they talk about, like, you know, I don't think gay people should be around. I don't think this. And then they interview the people saying these lines. They have the people together in a room working together on this project, not knowing what their beliefs are. And then at the very end, they're shown these interviews that one person just didn't agree with gay people. And it turns out he was with a transgender woman. And they said, you know, you can sit down and have a beer right now, or you can walk out of the room. And I won't give it away. Watch it. But it shows that if you get to know someone on a level where you like them, you're not going in there with any preconceived notions that they are transgender. Just get to know the person.
Right.
And don't make judgments.
Right.
It's goofy that it's a Heineken commercial. It's almost like a Heineken can solve the world's problem, like the Pepsi thing.
Sure.
But it's just done pretty beautifully. A little long, I will admit. But check that out. It's amazing.
Yeah, I like that because I totally agree. I mean, I totally agree with that sentiment. And that's why, like, you know, Sense8, the message is so... I find it that show so great because of the message that it sends. And, anytime that a show or some kind of art, you know, promotes inclusion and acceptance, then, you know.
It's a good thing.
Even if the show's horrible.
I can't believe that was 20 years ago that Ellen did.
That?
I mean, that's pretty amazing to me.
Let's get a call in really, really quickly. Dave has a question for you. Dave, go ahead. You're on with Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com.
Hi. I just wondered what the reviews have been of the show Good Behavior and when it's due back?
It is coming back.
Is that the Ted Danson show?
No, that's the TNT show with Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey.
Oh, okay.
It was on, when was it on? Earlier this year, I think. And she plays this former drug addict who is trying to get her son back because he was taken away. And she unintentionally gets together with this serial, not a serial killer, it's a contract killer.
Oh.
And they sort of they get together to run scams and do this stuff. But she makes a deal with him. He can't kill people. And, you know, she's.
That sounds good.
It's just very complicated, but interesting and gritty and something very different for her from Downton Abbey. And yes, it's coming back for season two, although I don't know when. It has been renewed, but I'm not sure when it'll be back.
Very good. Very good. Dave, thank you very much.
Dave.
Thanks very much.
Do you have to set it up again? You've created a really crazy contest on this Friday.
I just want to remind people that sometime between now and at 12 o'clock noon, you're going to be jarred by a dolphin noise. Don't be afraid. It's not an actual dolphin. Wendy, as it turns out, is able to speak dolphin. So when you hear that noise, be caller number 9 at 312-981-7200. And if you are caller number 9, you and somebody you love or like or you just want to get to know better, we'll head out to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in beautiful Door County, Wisconsin.
For a two-night stay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Good to know.
Wait till I get back home so I can call.
Kurt, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. Again, Kurt's website is tvshowpatrol.com. Go there and learn more things about TV. Thanks,
do it.
Kurt. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You know, sometimes we forget we have a radio show to do.
I know. And here it is. We're right in the middle of it. Rich Lenkoff is here. Rich, as you know, is one of the co-hosts of Legal Face-Off.
The important one, he'll tell you.
Is that still the case, Rich, are you, of the two of you?
Legally, I have to say I'm the important one. I get 50% more billing. My font is bigger on
that
the title, all that stuff.
What's
it's a whole contract.
It's not about the size.
But Jason Whiteside is the other member of the team.
Yep.
Yes.
Rich is also a partner in the high-profile law firm of Bryce Downey and Lenkoff, where he plays the role of Rich Lenkoff.
I do. I play one on TV and on radio.
There's a lot going on in the legal world, and for some reason, today is like a hotbed of activity.
It's a big day for legal geeks like me. So just later this afternoon at 1 o'clock, a high-profile case that we've covered on the show. You've covered Barbara Bird Bennett, who's the former head of the Chicago Public Schools, will be sentenced in federal court here in Chicago. She, of course, was convicted by a federal jury. She pled guilty to a variety of graft kickbacks, basically, from the Supes Academy while she was the head of the Chicago public school system. So the federal government's going after her very hard. They're asking for a very long sentence. She'll probably get a shorter amount because she will agree to community service. So that's today. And then
they're going for 7 years for her?
Yes, yes.
Wow. You know what? Just don't break the law. Who wants to go to prison?
You know, especially someone in that position, obviously, and especially given that she was one of many people who cycled through that job in a short period of time and who obviously was brought in to reform public schools, who presided over a very controversial closing of 50 schools. So, yeah, you know, I'm glad that she'll be sentenced today. And then at 2 o'clock...
Can I really quick about Barbara Bird Bennett? Remind me, but she has copped to the charges.
Yeah, she pled guilty.
Yeah.
She pled guilty to one count. There were several counts, but that one count carries pretty significant time. She admitted, you know, tearfully in court that she let down her students and the public.
Does that help her a little bit?
It does, it does. You know, generally when, first of all, when you admit to your wrongdoing, obviously the courts will look at that and give you some credit for that.
But I mean the weeping. Does that, then you're showing emotion. Is that,
sure. I mean, courts will.
But the apology, because isn't that Rod Blagojevich's problem kind of too? He never kind of owned it?
Sure. I mean, absolutely the fact
that
Blagojevich still hasn't come out and admitted it versus someone like Barbara Bird Bennett, who, you know, the evidence was pretty significant. There were emails in which she said, I need money for my grandchildren and for casinos. So, it was hard for her to not admit to it, admittedly. But yes, to answer your question, the fact that she admitted to it, the fact that she showed remorse, and the fact that she will now do some community service, all will affect the judge's sentence. And
what do you think will happen there?
I think she'll get, you know, a fairly significant sentence, not as much as the federal government is looking for. Because remember, I mean, we've had a lot of prosecutors on our show. These are high-profile cases, and the U.S. Attorney's Office wants to make an example out of these kind of people.
Of course.
This is the third largest public school system in the country.
Yeah.
You've got the head of it accepting kickbacks from a company that they were steering business to.
Right.
If I'm the prosecutor, you can't help but go after the maximum sentence to send a message that, especially in Chicago, where newsflash,
schools are in turmoil.
Exactly. You know, there's a huge budget deficit. This won't be accepted. So, you know, they have to go after her hard, but she'll probably get a far less sentence than the government's looking for.
Yeah.
I've learned again from Barbara Bird Bennett, do not break the law. And second of all, don't put things in an email because people can cut and paste.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
be
those
careful.
Emails were incredibly egregious. You know, the degree to which she was writing in not like legalese or nothing that was hard to understand. She literally said, I need money for casinos, and use an emoji. You know, the brazenness in which she wrote those words in an email, to think that, you know, people would not find that out is nuts.
Right.
But it continues to happen. You continue to see things like this, even though we see these political figures continue to get caught.
All right. So that sentencing happens later on today.
Correct. Yeah. Right. 1 o'clock.
Next up, I want to ask you this. I was reading about this case with Jesse Jackson Jr. and his ex-wife, Sandy.
Yes.
And she wants a written list of all the women that he has slept with.
Yes.
Is that something that we've seen before? Is that standard
And that's
practice?
Not happening, right?
Well, I mean, it's not happening, correct, because Jesse Jackson 2 days ago agreed to drop his pursuit of the case in Illinois. He's going to agree to have the divorce case proceed in D.C., which is where Sandy Jackson filed and where she wants it. That was a tactic. So to answer your question, whether it's common to have a list of your sexual partners while you're married, released, that was a discovery tool, a very effective one by her attorneys, because it turned out that he dropped the lawsuit, or he dropped his pursuit of the case in Illinois because of that. But that was a tactic.
That's
you know?
A chess move.
Exactly.
To say it's, if you do it, you look really bad.
No
so
question.
You don't want to do that.
It was meant by her attorneys to put pressure on him. He didn't want to release that, obviously. It's also incredibly expensive. I mean, you know, divorce proceedings, as you know, not you specifically, but as we all know, are among the most expensive for these kind of things. They're very acrimonious. They're very personal, and people are out to get each other in a very personal way that costs a lot of money. So, yeah, when he dropped the case, and it will proceed in D.C.
I've always thought that if politicians break a law, this is just in my dream world, whatever the normal sentencing should be, it should be double because you're a politician and you made us trust us. You made us trust you and you fooled us.
No question. I mean, that, you know, Blagojevich is among the most prominent examples of that. You know, I think it's important. I'm a former prosecutor myself. I think it's important to send a message to the public.
Yeah.
And when you're a prominent figure and you're caught doing something wrong, you want to not only sentence the person for the act that they did, but you want to send a message, because these cases should have ripple effects, and it should have, you know, it should serve to dissuade others to do it in the future. So hopefully the next person like Blagojevich or Barbara Bird Bennett is dissuaded from acting that way because of the
See the penalties.
But as we all know, it keeps happening.
Yeah,
so
it does.
Obviously, they're not learning their lesson.
All right. We have much to discuss with Rich Lankoff, including the twists and turns of the United case and many other things. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, we're talking to Rich Lankoff. We'll find out what's going on in the future of Barbara Bird Bennett later on today. There's also a tie-in because the Chicago Public Schools are involved in a lawsuit. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so CPS sued the state of Illinois, arguing that the disparity in funding that they receive versus the rest of the state is because of discrimination. Pretty, you know, bold legal theory, not one I think has a lot of merit, but used by Forrest Claypool, I think, as a tool to pressure Rauner in funding the $215 million that he initially agreed to fund and then rolled back. So today at 2 o'clock, Judge Valderrama here in the Circuit Court of Cook County will rule on this lawsuit to determine whether it proceeds. He's not going to rule on the lawsuit, but just on a motion to dismiss. The state has said that the suit is baseless mm-hmm. and should not proceed. So today the judge is going to decide whether the case should proceed or if it won't. Practically what that means is that if the judge agrees with the state that it's meritless, then it's likely that the schools will close 3 weeks early on June 1st of this year, which, you know, as a father of two kids in public schools here in Chicago is terrible.
Are judges swayed when an attorney on either side says to a judge, this suit is baseless, it's meritless? Has a judge ever gone, well, no, I never really thought about that, but as long as you're mentioning it, maybe it is. Are they swayed by that?
That plus evidence.
Yeah,
right?
Evidence is more important, isn't
the
it?
Mere statement is not enough. In fact, you know, judges don't like when you are that bold without backing it up. In fact, you know, when we argue that way, you got to be careful about being, you know, too confident, because judges, as you can imagine, don't like people coming in and saying anything is, you know, either black or white.
Right.
So, you know, it's a great question, because, you know, you want to be a little bit humble about making that argument.
Sure.
With that, but still be very confident, you know, so you don't want to come in and say, well, this is a no-brainer, judge, this is so obvious, because judges will just say, well, we'll let the jury decide,
yeah.
you know, so it's a great question, because on a motion to dismiss, you do want to approach it with a little bit of respect to the other side, because, you know, the other side has, in their opinion, a valid argument.
Okay, and then, of course, a settlement was reached between United Airlines and Dr. Dow, who was dragged from the plane. All I want to know is how much he got in the settlement. Will we ever know that?
I'm about to tell you. No, I don't know.
We'll find out, won't we?
No, probably not, because really? Those cases are confidential. I mean, one of the hallmarks of settling those kind of cases is the confidentiality portion of the release. So, you know, what will happen is United and this passenger will exchange a release, and part of the release, and the release just means that the passenger is going to release United of any liability in exchange for money. And part of that is generally a confidentiality agreement.
Can't talk about it.
Yeah. Now, that's not always the case. You know, that's just subject to negotiation. But, you know, I represent United. I represent lots of similar companies. And 99% of the time, confidentiality is something that, you know, the defendant insists on for obvious reasons, right? You don't want to have other people necessarily doing the same thing just for money. You don't
right,
want people copycat kind of cases. So, yeah, confidentiality is almost certainly going to be in effect in this case. So you probably will never know the amount.
Except that Dr. Dow could tell his wife, and his wife could tell her sister, and her sister
no.
could tell her friend.
Can't
no,
tell anyone.
You can't tell
no.
anybody.
The language is very clear that you can't tell anyone. Now, practically, do people tell people? Of course, every
yeah.
day. But the penalty, there's penalties in, you know, in the contract for that. So he would be wise to abide by the terms of the confidentiality agreement that he has signed or will sign in the next day or so.
Or they can sue him and get their money back, can't they?
Absolutely.
Because of the breach
absolutely.
Of contract.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the
I
same
should
way.
Have been an attorney.
Yeah, why isn't Wendy an attorney?
Well, sign her up. Sign her up.
All right. What about this aspect of it? We read this out loud. Was it yesterday or the day before, where United was taking out ads in the papers?
Full page.
Full page ads, kind of saying, look, what we did, not our best move.
Shameful, they
yeah.
said.
And was that good PR for them? I imagine it was.
Sure. I mean, the CEO has been very active in the media. He gave an interview yesterday on one of the morning shows in which, as you said, he said that we screwed up. He's now said that a few times. He said that we have taken steps to alleviate or to avoid this in the future. Some airlines have announced that they will no longer overbook. I think Southwest yesterday said they have now eliminated the overbooking that in this case resulted in this incident. So, yeah, I think there's been real steps by United and other airlines coming out of this case that will positively impact us all.
And something important, too, that they said they will handle it on their own and not bring in
right.
law enforcement, because honestly, that's where the problem was.
part of the problem, no question, was you know, in Demetrio's words, Thomas Demetrio was the lawyer for the doctor in this case. He said that they violated the law, the security violated the law by removing him unlawfully. So that was certainly part of it, and United has said that they will no longer do that. There's some question about whether, you know, the city will do that in the future. They're still working that out. But, yeah, I think going forward, this incident will have a lot of changes on the way these incidents are handled in the future.
We've talked to you on numerous occasions about updates on the Bill Cosby case. So two things have happened in the last couple of weeks with Bill Cosby. Number one is his daughter has come out and explained that Bill Cosby couldn't do anything harmful to people. He's just not that kind of guy. Does that make an impact? And thing number two is that Bill Cosby is now saying, I can't see anymore. I'm blind. Does that have any
impact? He wasn't then.
He was not then.
Yeah. You know, all of that, you know, the daughter, first of all, is more character evidence. It's not really impacting the substance of the case of liability. She'll be more character evidence. And, you know, unless, of course, she offers testimony that, hey, I was there that night and it's impossible that he was there. In other words, some kind of alibi. In terms of Bill Cosby's own testimony about, hey, I was blind, obviously, you know, that is self-serving. Blind people can, even if he was blind, they can commit crimes too.
Yep.
You know, we've seen this over and over again with people coming to court in wheelchairs or saying that because I'm now 80 years old, I should, you know, get a lesser sentence. You know, 80-year-old people, blind people, commit crimes all the time. Mm. And they serve time for crimes that they committed when they were not blind or not old.
Justice is blind, Rich. Let me remind you of that.
That's right. Absolutely true.
Justice itself is blind.
So that'll have maybe some impact, but very little, in my opinion.
Okay, and something that I've been hearing a lot of, Governor Bruce Rauner, from what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I very well may be, is there's this abortion bill, HB 40, and now he is suggesting that insurance does not cover abortion unless it's an emergency. But when the state gets its budget, then maybe insurance will cover it again. I think this is an important thing to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, more, you know, it all relates in many respects to the budget issues that we're having. But House Bill 40 was passed by the Illinois House this week. It would fund, continue to fund women's rights to abortion, would provide state coverage, state Medicaid for that. Really, in the wake of, you know, Justice Gorsuch's elevation to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. many are feeling that Roe v. Wade, protecting a woman's right to abortion, will be rolled back, and especially if there's another vacancy on the Supreme Court. So this is all sort of part of that bundle. And, yeah, as you mentioned, Wendy, Governor Rauner has threatened to veto this legislation if it comes across his desk, which, you know, we had Alderman Pawar yesterday, who's running for the Democratic nomination for governor here in Illinois. You know, he was very forceful in criticizing Rauner for changing his mind completely. When campaigning for governor, Rauner was very vocal in being pro-choice. Now he seems to be turning the other way and threatening to veto this pro-choice legislation.
We can hear more about that on Legal Face-Off this week.
Yes, we will be dropping our – is dropping the right term that the kids use?
Yeah, kids say
our podcast will be up on WGNradio.com today. We had the gubernatorial candidate on yesterday, as well as some other great topics. So, yeah, check that out on WGN
Radio. It's not nice to call him gubernatorial. He seems like a smart guy. What's wrong with him? Why would you say that?
He was very smart.
All right. Rich, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Great to see you. That's Rich Lenkoff. We'll take a quick break, and we'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.